The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Jim McRae, Ph.D., is a data scientist and consultant based in Washington State. Since 2014, Dr. McRae has been using data supplied by the state, merged with his proprietary compilations of industry-related information, to produce analytic summaries, metrics, and numerous insights for the legal cannabis industry in the state of Washington and industry regulators, operators, investors, consumers, patients, and observers. Lucky enough to have Dr. McRae on the phone with me now. And Dr. McRae, thank you so much for your time today. As states have been moving forward with regulation of the medical and adult use markets, lab testing has been an essential component. But, well, what exactly does testing really entail? I mean, it's a broad term, lab testing. Is it potency? Well, is it purity? What does it mean? What are we doing?
Lab testing, as we're seeing it in the regulated cannabis markets, and I just up front, I know Washington State better than any, but I've done business in other states and I'm aware of a number of them. The general categorization is twofold. One is loosely called potency testing, and normally people mean cannabinoid levels, typically THC and or CBD. And then quality assurance testing, which is generally a set of pass-fail tests on the presence of things in the cannabis or the absence thereof, of things that you don't want to see there, foreign matter, molds, salmonella, various things, mycotoxins, too high a moisture level for products that might be stored in Ziploc baggies and mold if they're on the shelves for a month, if they're too moist, that sort of thing. So the potency tests typically are cannabinoid levels. They probably should increasingly, and I'm beginning to see this, include terpene levels, and so that people understand the profile of the product that they are taking. Any given fixed THC level or THC-CBD ratio will generally be mitigated or changed or altered, you know, based on the terpene profile and a few other things of the thing that they're smoking. So, that is what the testing is about. People are looking to see how strong is the product, typically measured by cannabinoids today, and is it safe? Does it pass all quality assurance testing standards? That answer your question?
Very much so. I mean, it's so. Okay, here's where I'm going to admit that I sound stupid, and I get most of my science information from television. But, you know, I don't think I'm alone in this. I mean, a lab test, I think that I'm not the only one who has an image of the scientist takes a sample of some substance, puts it into major mass spec, and a little while later there's a ding and out pops a piece of paper that has a list of stuff that was in the substance. It's not really that simple, is it? Or is it?
Well, yeah. Huh. Except, I mean, the way the system sets it up typically is they go to great lengths to ensure that the laboratories that are making these assessments, the potency and the quality assurance, are certified. They are certified typically to either specific standards defined within the state, which is what Washington has done, or Washington subcontracted that out to somebody from Pennsylvania, a company that does this for other labs, or a state will hold their labs accountable to be certified to a certain level of what's called proficiency, which is typically one of the ISO ones, 17025 or one of those, which is an international standards organization certification for general analytical laboratories. So if they, you know, if you're at that standard, you know how to run a mass spectrometer or an HPLC. You know how to interpret the results. Typically, these labs are required to have, a lab director with doctoral level, graduate level, you know, accreditation in some of the analytic sciences, that sort of thing. You know, so there's people on staff that know how to do it. There's equipment that can do it. And the certification bodies make sure that they are, you know, basically capable of doing the job. And then you get to the real world where the accreditors, mom and dad, I like to call them, are not looking over the shoulders of the laboratories. And they start pumping out tens of thousands of tests, in some instances, more than that, to support the regulated cannabis industry that's emerging in the current state. And to the extent that the state's consumers have a tendency, just looking at flower for now, which is usually always the biggest seller, looking for high THC flower, you know, the labs that are able or by whatever means to produce higher THC numbers have a tendency to get repeat business. The labs who rarely fail a quality assurance test are tend to get repeat business. You know, where's it coming from? I don't know. But very clearly, there are labs that if you quantify the labs on two bases, two very specific measures, one is, what is their average cannabinoid level? I think terpenoids should be included. What is their average cannabinoid level reporting for flower? And another one, which is what percentage of their flower fails at least one or more quality assurance tests. And sometimes looking at the individual tests is very informative. But if you do that, you typically will see in any state that there's a lab or a small handful of labs that are reporting higher THC levels than the others. And they typically, not always, but they typically also show fewer, smaller failure rates for products. So with a smaller failure rate, that product can be, more of that product can be sold statistically. You know, with a statistically smaller potency and higher potency level, a cannabinoid level on the product, than their comparators, the product tends to sell at a higher price and also, by the way, more rapidly off retail shelves and wholesale transaction frequencies as well. So it's a win-win, and I've labeled in some work I did in Washington State a few years ago, pretty in-depth analysis on my blog, I called the labs that did that pattern of results either statistically unexpectedly high potency levels or statistically unexpectedly low product quality failure rates and called them friendly labs with the view that they are friendly towards their clientele, which is typically the processors and or the farms that are paying them to do these tests. And those labs, by the way, have a tendency, if you look at them, to very quickly come to dominate some markets in terms of the testing that's done. So it's not just a little corner thing. The farms and the processors tend to notice when a lab is giving 6, 7, 8 point higher THC than anybody else is, and they tend to want to give their business to that player. In some cases, not everybody. But it quickly comes to dominate the market. And I've seen that in multiple states.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, in terms of ethics, it takes two to tango. You know, I mean, a few companies doing a few of the companies in there may be ethically challenged, as it were, and hoping to get the right results. But how seriously does the industry as a whole take those concerns?
What part of the industry are you talking about? I think most of the industry does, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, I mean, like I say, I mean, obviously there might be a few companies that are ethically challenged in that way, but the industry does take this stuff seriously.
Oh, yeah. Washington. I know Washington's state.
Right on. Your specialty being Washington, we'll stipulate that, because that's... you've got one of the oldest systems in the state, or in the country.
Well, but I'll talk to Washington. I know a lot more about our state. You know, we got 5 years of data under our belts, and I know how this market has evolved at a very atomic level. We have more transparency in terms of our state laws and constitution than most states do. So virtually all of the transactional data for the first 3.5 years of the market are available for analysis. And it's just kick-ass. Anyway, I've seen no other state that comes close to that in terms of what they make freely available to anybody. And I built a business using those data for a number of years. Anyway, back to the point, having access to that sort of information allows you to specify things in the market that are not estimates, but they are actually statements of how much of this is going on. So it's kind of a special thing, and it's really neat, but it becomes a consumer beware type of thing. And it can only go on in the context of when people can see it, and any regulatory agency that has a traceability system that functions has access to these data. And, you know, if they choose to, they can look at it. And I've seen states that are all over this stuff. And I think they're, you know, I mean, if I were to recommend to friends to go to one state or the other at some point down the road when not engaged with those states, I would point them to certain states saying these states have their act together. You know, you're more likely to have safe product on the shelves that with their past quality assurance tests actually mean something. And further, if you're going to be trying it, you probably have at least a better idea what the potency of the thing is based on what the label says. If labs are doing the honest, good, you know, proper reporting. If they're not, if for whatever reason they're inflating cannabinoids and failing to fail product that probably should fail, or more specifically, demonstrating failure rates that are statistically smaller than that of their peers, if there's not an ancillary reason to explain that, I mean, it's probably not true. Or it's at least questionable.
Right on. And this one, I realize you're not a chemist, you're not a chemical engineer, so this one might be a tough one. But the vape crisis that's been happening, one of the concerns are some things that they may not have been testing for that might be showing up. Vitamin E acetate is something that's been pointed out as a possible concern. And we've had, you know, well, we do use it, we don't use it, and people are moving away from it if they did. Would that have been something that would have been apparent to a tester, are they testing for things that they need to test for? But I'm not saying this right. Basically, if they're not looking for something specific, would they necessarily find it?
No, I think we get. No, of course, if we're not looking for something, we're not going to find it. First of all, with respect to the vaping thing, the lung injuries that are popping up, which, by the way, are pretty scary. If people, you know, they've been hearing stuff in the news, but my evaluation of it, and I know a little bit about this stuff, is it's scary. As soon as the pathologists that are looking at the worst cases, the ones that have died, you know, they're cutting out pieces of their lung and looking at the tissue. And one of the pathologists, experienced person, made the comment that it looks almost like a chemical burn, as you would expect if you saw mustard gas in the lungs. You know, the World War I poisonous gas that they used in the trenches. I mean, that's horrific, because that implies not something that builds over time, like it's only if you vape too much it's going to get you. That's the sort of thing, if you get a hot shot of whatever that stuff is, it's going to burn your lungs. It's going to chemically burn your lungs, and they may not recover. In the meanwhile, let's hope you do, because most of these people are being seen now, you know, that are getting that level of scarring. Remember, a lot of them are dead. That's why they have lung tissue to look at them. But they're going to the emergency room because this young, healthy individual that was climbing mountains yesterday and did a hit off of their nicotine, you know, Mondo battery vape pen, is suddenly in the hospital, unable to get enough oxygen to support their bodily functions out of their lungs. So, you know, that's kind of friggin' scary. So yes, can the labs do something about that? If they know what they're looking for, what the labs do look for typically is, you know, some of the culprits, that heavy metals is a possibility, although personally I would not expect them to be coming on this acutely. There would be more an accumulation thing. After 10 years, your knee joints would stop working and then your teeth would fall out and all that good stuff happens. With the chemical stuff, the biggest suspect that I know of that we test for sometimes is pesticides. And these are all concentrates, vapes. Many of the things that people put on plants concentrate when you concentrate them. And all I know in way of data this way, for sure, is that in Washington, when we've looked at concentrates, and when other people have looked at concentrates, and when government agencies have looked at concentrates, they're typically seeing over 50% of them popping positive for at least one pesticide, in many instances more than one pesticide, above the allowable levels of presence. In some cases, many, many, many times higher than the allowable levels. And I don't know, who knows if those are hurting people's lungs, but they're all designed to kill critters in one way, shape, or another, or make them not able to reproduce or something, or breed. Pesticides are not good things to be pumping into your lungs in big doses. And a batch of concentrate, concentrated and pesticide-drenched raw material, if that ever occurs, it doesn't, frankly, in much in regulated systems, but not everybody tests, could possibly be doing this. I don't know what it is. I'm really curious to see what the ECBD says, and I hope fewer people get hurt going forward since the news is out.
This is an interview with Dr. Jim McCray. He's a data scientist and consultant based in Washington State. We're talking about labs and lab testing of the legal cannabis market. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's get back to that interview. That really is what prompted my badly worded question from earlier about how these tests work, and if you just, you know, out pops a sheet that tells you everything that's in it. If you don't know what you're looking for, it would be tough to find it.
Yeah, with pesticides, typically labs will do. Let's assume there's at least 10,000 possible pesticides out there. That's probably in the about right ballpark. Nobody's going to test for 10,000. That's like expensive. You've got to test for each analyte, they call them, each pesticide. The lists that I've seen typically are somewhere between 22 and 250 individual pesticide analytes that folks test for. I think usually the regulatory bodies are more in the 20 to 50 range they require. It really varies heavily. But every piece of data I've got, most of the good stuff I've got, is from Washington that I can talk about. I have data from other states. But show that a handful of pesticides are showing up much more often than others. And, you know, and I'm not going to talk about them here. Those are commonly available if you look for them. And they're kind of scary because some of those actually have directly demonstrable cardiopulmonary ramifications. And so when you see people dropping unexpectedly and fairly suddenly from vaping nicotine and or THC stuff, which appears to be differentially sourced from non-regulated channels or poorly regulated channels, it's kind of scary.
Oh, indeed. And I see the, well, I know that here, where I'm in Oregon, for instance, and the contents have to be listed, except that natural flavors just get listed as natural flavors. Viscosity booster, whatever the heck that is, the stuff that's added to make the stuff work better in these little pens, doesn't have to be listed at all. And that's the part that gets. So I mean, the product's been tested. That's fine, but what if we don't know what's in those other things that are added?
Sure, a lot of people don't know the folks that are doing it. Ask questions. Require stuff on the label. Require your bud tender to know what the your processors, the people they're carrying on the shelves, are doing with their product. I know of, I'm not going to name names, this is not a promotional gig, but I know people that are producing in the state of Washington who just intrinsically, knowing that that extractor is on their staff, I trust the product that's coming out of that farm and that processor. No question. Anything they make, it's safe, it's good, and it's very high quality. People got to start, like, differentiating the product that they take. And I don't know what the best source of information is in different states. I know what it is in Washington. But they really should start differentiating and asking questions. Require, when you buy a product, to see the certificate of analysis that the lab made when they tested that brand harvest whatever batch of product. If the store can't supply it, go shop somewhere else. You know, little things like that. If the brand can't supply it, buy a brand that can. Brands that stand behind their product. Brands that put it in writing. But that's just a... That's the idealist in me talking. Know who's doing your product. If you don't know, then really pay attention. If any of their industry groups are lobbying your local government or regulators to try to ensure product is safe and that the labels are accurate with respect to potency, support those efforts. Encourage them. Tell them you're paying tax for your regulated cannabis. You want your label to mean something. You want there to be value to having regulated cannabis versus the unregulated stuff that's still available to you, presumably, that is part of being regulated. And part of that is knowing what you're taking and knowing that it's passed a minimal number of defined quality assurance safety tests. I mean, that's not too much for a consumer to ask. Washington's pumping in $500 million a year in new tax revenue now from this, from cannabis, directly. That's not even multiples down the road. That's directly from the industry. Pretty good chunk of change.
Well,
the consumers should get benefit from that.
See, this is the thing I've been trying to talk about quite a bit, and the listeners will, I know I've been harping on this, but it's, you know, the prohibition ends. That doesn't mean it turns into a libertarian wet dream. We need to have regulation. There has to be safety. Part of the concern has been that you don't, as my friend Dean Becker always says, under prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. So with regulation, we should, right? And that's...
Yeah. I'll take one... I'm going to just challenge one thing you just said, if you don't mind.
Please.
You said prohibition ends. Prohibition has not ended. What we have is legalization with prohibition. And as soon as you see you can't place a store within 1,000 feet of a school, that is prohibition. You're prohibiting that 1,000-foot radius. But more importantly, there's still people in jail for selling cannabis, for using cannabis, for possessing cannabis. There's, with no violence or anything associated with that, just, you know, what we do today now legally in producing taxes. There's limited numbers of licenses being granted for retailers, for growers, for processors. That's a control thing. That's not free access. Some states, the one I live in, for example, have begun to regulate medical cannabis, and they've done it in a way here, now with more than three years under their belt, in a way that's just an abysmal failure by any measure. And the response of the state agency, the Department of Health, the primary agency, is to just shut up shop. They stopped updating their reports. You know, they used to report every month a list of the stores across the state. We have about 470 active retail stores for cannabis. Which of those stores, what subset of those stores, were able to treat or to serve a patient as a patient? And I won't go into the details, but there's some added services, like having a certified medical consultant that knows something more than a typical bud tender typically does. Being able to initiate their card if it needs to be initiated. Being able to give them a sales tax-free, they still pay 37% excise tax, but a slightly less expensive purchase than they otherwise would have. That they've stopped updating that list. The last time they updated it was almost 6 months ago. So our regulators, one of the reasons they stopped updating is because they've lost a huge number. There are fewer stores that are medically certified now, 3 years into a regulated market, than there were 12 months into it. There are fewer patients registered in the database now, 3 years later, than there were 12 months into it. There's less product being sold to patients as patients today than there was 2 years ago. It's ridiculous. So, little diatribe.
No worries. I fully accept. I fully accept and acknowledge your criticism. You're exactly right. You're absolutely right, and I should know that.
But that was indirectly in the point of one of the few differentiators that the medical patients have in product in Washington State, and they represent less than 2% of the product that's sold. Okay, so 98% of the product in our state does not require pesticide or heavy metal testing. The only stuff that does is the 2% or less than 2% that is sold to patients as, well, it's not sold to patients necessarily. It is certified by the Department of Health as medical grade cannabis. And that has been pesticide tested and heavy metal tested. But that is less than 2% of the product in our state. We are the only state in the nation that does not require pesticide testing. So many of my patient friends who typically are high dose users and often have compromised immune systems, often are weakened in one way or another. The last thing they need is massive doses of pesticides and heavy metals on their system. And so if they're in a position where they do not trust the regulated system or the vast majority of the regulated system, what are they to do? I don't know. Hopefully they're not going to vapes that are doing the sort of stuff that we're seeing to, you know, young, healthy people across the nation right now. So I went off on a tangent. Get me back on track, and then I'm going to have to talk.
Well, I think those were some very, very on point and very sobering thoughts, frankly. Doc, tell us how to find your website, how to find you on social media, keep up with the work that you're doing, and if you have any closing thoughts for the listeners.
Sure. First of all, best place to get me is my blog. I'm going to be shutting down my commercial stuff in the very near future because I'm becoming a public servant and doing stuff in that range. But my blog will probably continue on. So that is Hot Blog, www.highintelligence, H-I-G-H, intelligence, one word, .org. That'll go to the blog. Final closing remarks. I wish all the states coming online all the best. Vaping people, I'd be really careful, particularly if you're sourcing your stuff from the unregulated market. There's something out there that's doing really bad damage. We don't know what it is. I have no reason to believe it's the flavors that Washington banned the other day. It's something bad, it could be. But something's going on, and until the CDC figures it out, which hopefully will happen soon, be careful of where you source anything you vape, and be careful about vaping.
That was my interview with Dr. Jim McCray. He's a data scientist and consultant based in Washington State. We've been talking about lab tests and the cannabis market, and that's all the time we have today. You've been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs are available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage, drugtruth.net. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts has a Facebook page, too. Give it a like. Share it with friends. Remember, knowledge is power. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.